This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Arman Shrocki. Each week, Arman will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Baird with us. And if you could, please tell us a little bit about yourself and your company and the story behind it.
Sure. Yeah. My name's Baird, and I am a five-time SaaS founder, which has all been in the last 8 years. So we've had a lot of different moves happening. But my background's in sales and marketing, and we started our first company in 2015, which was a social audio network. We were very young and tried to build a B2C social company and made all the wrong business mistakes. It was essentially like a crash course in what not to do when starting a software business. But luckily, it transitioned us into a three different SaaS businesses that tailored towards social and content creators, helping them share podcasts, a video editing and captioning tool, a repurposing platform as well for content creators. And they were very much B2B, more, we call them prosumer markets. So these were individuals that they weren't quite businesses, but they were aspiring entrepreneurs. And so we served prosumer markets with these business for years, which we got really good at growth, really good at freemium engines, really good at pricing and inbound marketing. So the businesses grew very quickly, but we wound up just fighting churn all the time. It was 10, 14, 18% churn with these businesses. So we would, our inbound was great, but we got to a point finally where the churn set a growth ceiling for all these companies. And when we wanted to sell them, every time we would have a chat with a potential acquirer, churn was just the black eye on our valuation. It was the black eye keeping our valuation down. So we got to work and spent about a year and a half on doing nothing but working on churn for these high volume businesses, and built a lot of internal tools that really made a big impact. Namely was working on our cancellation flows and building dynamic personalized cancellation flows to save canceling customers. And we finally got our churn under control. And we were able to sell two of those businesses and had great exits, and decided, trying to figure out what we wanted to do next. And we decided to take all these tools that we had built internally, and they became the beginning of Churnkey, which is what I'm building full time now, which is a full stack retention platform for high volume SaaS businesses. And we help subscription businesses cut churn with various different tools that are in our platform. So it's been a lot of twists and turns over the years, and making the transition from B2C to B2B was a very tough process. We've had to learn all of new playbooks, because what worked before doesn't work for our B2B business. But I think that's probably the quickest short story I can give there with context on kind of what brought us here.
No, that's great. I appreciate it. Of course, I would love to learn from you, who has experienced both sides, B2C and B2B, about, you know, the way you see the differences, and if the transformation from B2C to B2B is more difficult, or you think the other way would be even more, you know, challenging. But then we get to also, I would like to ask about churn. Of course, that's really your expertise, and I think that's a topic that most of SaaS companies would be very interested to know about that part. But let's start with the first question that just, you know, you mentioned B2C, B2B. How do you see that kind of change? I have seen some founders that they came from B2B and moved to B2C, and they said, almost impossible, the famous story of Steve Jobs that he got from B2C, from Apple to B2B, and he hated the B2B, and he returned back to B2C again when he returned to Apple. So there are many of these kind of, you know, changes. From your perspective, how do you characterize it? What was the reason that even moved you from B2C to B2B? Because churn is a very kind of shared challenge on both sides. You know, what made you feel that I should go to B2B and then start churning, right, and stay on B2C and do that?
I would say we were very naive. We just, you know, we had this idea. We had built these tools that really worked for us. And we knew that, you know, to clarify, we sell to both. Turnkey sells to both B2B and B2C businesses. But from our perspective, it's always B2B, whether it's a consumer business or B2B. Our sale is always selling towards a business. So we just kind of walked into it without really giving it a whole lot of preparation. It's a good question of which one is harder to transition from. I suspect it really depends on the person. I think personally, I originally really enjoyed selling to individuals. Individuals are very, consumers. You're selling to just one person in this instance, whether it's prosumers or B2C. They're very emotionally driven. Businesses are too, but there's a lot more that has to happen in a sale. With an individual, you can really, you know, sell to somebody's emotions, their aspirations, their excitement. You can catch them in a moment, and you can encourage them to make a decision and move forward with something that they think is going to make their life better. And I really enjoyed that working in B2C because people would come to us and they were just ready to go. They were very excited. They'd come to our landing page. We would, you know, do a really good job using analytics to make sure we're, you know, using the right copy and, inciting the right emotions. And they would be really excited to get started and they would activate on the spot. And then there was a big issue of keeping them retained going forward. Like that's the advantage of B2C is that it's very easy to activate customers, but it's really hard to retain them. Now moving to B2B, it's the exact opposite. When you're working with a business, even if they are emotionally driven and very excited and feeling a lot of pain, there's a process to buy things for a business. You have to talk to multiple stakeholders. There's engineers that may have to implement something. There's marketing that has processes that have to follow. So it's much less about appealing to the emotions and the direct immediate call to action. It's more about building the business case and building the relationships. So B2B, we have found it takes much longer to activate a customer. But when you find the right targets and you walk them through, you teach them how to buy your product, they're much easier to retain long term. So they're just very different worlds. And going from one to the other was really eye opening. I think there's, you know, a lot of the SaaS content out there for, new, especially if there's any, you know, aspiring SaaS entrepreneurs listening to this. A lot of the SaaS advice that's given is just kind of given to both sides, whether you're starting B2B or B2C. And in reality, there's a lot of differences. Kind of have to, you know, figure out how to decipher what to listen to and what not to. So yeah, different worlds, but it was painful at first getting into B2B and learning this new, you know, really sales-driven, relationship-driven process. But what I am really enjoying about it is now I have customers that I sold a year and a half ago that are now, we've kept a relationship and they're now coming back to buy more. They're coming back to upgrade and we're getting ready to have a lot more. We're able to have much more in-depth business and strategic discussions versus just very quick fixes. So I'm learning to love it and am really starting to enjoy it now that we're 3 years in now and a couple hundred customers and growing really fast. So it's been a lot of fun.
Great. Now, when it comes to churn, from your perspective, what is the kind of the sweet spot for you guys? From for example, the average sales price that you target, and you say these are the type of B2B companies that, you know, our technology or our tools or our experience really would fit best to serve them, to bring down their churn?
That's a great question. So we started with average revenue per user. That's definitely like the lowest hanging fruit, is deciding which customers need a retention platform like ours. So we started off initially working with social media companies that serve social media markets, marketing automation, sales automation. These are tools that are bought quickly. They're bought impulsively many times and generally have an average revenue per user between $20 and $150. That's really where we started as our sweet spot and continues to be going forward. But what we have found,
the number you mentioned, is it the number per month or is it per year? Is it monthly subscription or annual subscription?
It's primarily companies that focus on monthly subscriptions. We do work with customers that have annual subscriptions, but what we have found is that annual subscribers are much harder to retain because they buy and they have very long feedback loops between when you're talking to them, because they purchased for a whole year. So the best time to catch them is that last month before, and proactively reach out to annual customers. Monthly customers are much more transient. They'll come in and out, and they're much easier to recover in whether they have a failed payment or they have clicked the cancellation button or they're having support issues. So generally, we focus on customers that have a high concentration of monthly subscribers. And probably the most interesting thing that we have found with churn is that, yes, average revenue per user matters. And, you know, that's kind of why B2B usually has lower churn rates versus B2C, because, you know, the lower the price, the more impulsive the decision to buy, which results in a more impulsive decision to cancel. But what we have found is that the pricing model and how you price your product also has a big direct correlation to churn. Good example of this is SaaS companies that are B2B or B2C that use a usage-based model. So you're charged based on how often you use the product. Those customers are going to see higher churn because customers are making, every month they're making a decision like, oh, how much am I going to use this? Am I going on vacation next month? Am I really getting value out of this? And when it's usage-based, they're thinking about their bill and their usage constantly. So there's going to be a lot more cancellations. On the flip side, there's also going to be a lot of reactivations. And that's what really brings the loop together with activation, churn, and then reactivation is what creates that life cycle marketing flywheel, which to me is the biggest opportunity over the next few years. So I think, you know, acquisition and churn have been focused on a lot over the last decade in SaaS, but I think reactivations is really a big opportunity where customers can get more intelligent on reactivating customers. So there's a lot of variables that go into churn, but for us, we really look at what's your average revenue per user, what's your volume, and also what's your billing model, what's your pricing model, and those three things we can usually put people into certain benchmarks of ranges of where we think they should be on a churn scale.
Yeah, that's great. So the main parameters there essentially help you to look at these companies in a monthly basis, the MRR that they have, and the type of licensing. You mentioned usage-based licensing, mm-hmm. and you mentioned that when it's usage-based licensing, then there is higher churn just because it's usage-based licensing. What about the other type of licensing that might be fixed, right? So it's per user, mm-hmm. or even not per user. It might be just a fixed amount and it's monthly, and then, you know, companies just charging that amount. In that case, from your perspective, how does it really help those companies if they have the option to move to usage-based? Would you advise them to move to usage-based regardless, even if churn is going to be higher? Because it's still usage-based might bring them more profit or revenue, or based on what you have experienced, you have seen a kind of advantage of one pricing model over the other?
That's a great question. I would say every pricing model has its advantages and disadvantages. I mean, it really comes down to the use case and the customer that you're serving. But yeah, usage-based is a great model when customers, you know, want that flexibility and you want to increase activations, and customers can get started with a certain amount, but hopefully scale up over time and you'll be able to charge more for those customers. The next most common we see is feature-based pricing. Which allows, again, nice activation because customers might just buy a few features they want. And again, you're hoping they grow into it over time. Feature-based pricing is a little bit harder to recover canceling customers from usage-based, but still very possible. And the strategy is just a little bit different, right? And I think this is a little bit of a long answer to your question, but also to incorporate, each pricing model has its advantages and disadvantages, but it also has... they all have their own unique retention strategies. So for example, usage-based, you're going to try to use discounts and pauses and ways to alleviate pressure for a short period of time until they come back to their expected usage. Feature-based is very different, where you can still save these customers, but you have to approach it differently with different plans. Lower discounts also work really well here. And then also being able to get customer success and customer support involved when a feature is not working how it should. But definitely one really interesting model for feature-based pricing plans is offering what we call hidden subscriptions, hidden plans. So these are pricing plans that customers can't see when they're signing up, but when they're canceling, there's more options. So lower priced hosting plans that save data over time that encourage them to come back and reactivate because they don't lose their data. And then, you know, seat based is the other most common that we see with doing the license based on how many users are in the platform. And what we see there is much more stickier in general, because you have more people using the platform, which is an advantage for improving retention. But what we have found there is the most important thing for saving seat-based pricing models, customers in the seat-based pricing model, is understanding not just how many seats are there, but who are in the seats and speaking to them differently. So if a marketing person is going to cancel, and there's also an accounting and an engineer on the on their seat license, you got to make sure that you are talking to the marketing person in their language when they're going to cancel and make them realize, like, hey, here's what you're going to lose on the marketing side. Oh, and by the way, your CFO is in here as well, and he's going to lose these reports. So it's just a different way to frame the offers and incentives to keep those customers, which I think for us, this has really been the biggest realization, is customizing based on your pricing model, because it just really how you price really drives how you should be focusing on retention.
One of the parameters that is probably very much relates to the churn rate is the customer acquisition cost, meaning that if your cost of customer acquisition is lower, you have more tolerance for churn, versus if you are spending more money to acquire a customer, churn is going to be more of a severe problem. So definitely, logically, it seems like there is no a magic number that you would say, if the churn is above this number, then it's very red zone or it's green zone. But because it seems like it has to, it also relates to some other parameters, like the, you know, how quickly you can recover and get some customers. If you can, you know, sign up customers much faster and at lower cost, then it's okay to really grow, even if the churn is a little bit higher. But nonetheless, that's my understanding. But you may say, no, actually, I have a magic number. This is the magic number when it comes to churn that brings you to the red zone. And if you go beyond this number, then your business is not going to grow or has a very hard time to grow.
I think it's a great point to look at customer acquisition costs in relation to your churn to understand, you know, the health of your subscription business, which is really important. I don't think there's a perfect, you know, range or zone to be in, because it really comes down to your, you know, customer acquisition costs is really going to correlate with your profit margins and, you know, whether or not you can support those acquisition costs. And the retention also is kind of helping decide whether or not it's worth to overspend if they're going to stay for a long period of time. But I think what's interesting that, you know, I think those indicators that you brought up are really good, and SaaS operators need to know them and understand where they sit. But I think maybe what's underlying under that, the customer acquisition cost, is really how quickly do your customers make decisions? How quickly do they make a buying decision? And that is what we find really correlates to churn. So in kind of general principle from a psychology standpoint, if somebody decides to buy a product very quickly, the chances are they're going to be willing to cancel that product very quickly. The flip side of that on the other scale is if somebody has spent a lot of time thinking about the decision, maybe they've consulted with other coworkers or leadership on the decision and have gotten sign off. That's the highest level, right? There's a lot of process that goes into that. They're going to be that much more likely not to cancel. Mm-hmm. And so it's very anecdotal, right? There's no metrics on that. You can't time somebody on how they make decisions, but I think you need to have a good feeling for that. And then you compare that to your customer acquisition costs and say, well, if I'm spending, you know, too much money and there's, you know, such a long decision process, not spending enough, and then there's a long decision process, is probably a bad fit there. But that's generally fine. We've also just found that with our target market, that products that are bought quickly and impulsively, they generally have much higher churn. And that can be B2B or B2C. It's really much more of a use case scenario, which has kind of been a challenge for us because it's hard to just, you know, I can't go to a analytics platform and pull a list of customers that have impulsive buyers. So that's something that we've had to just do manually and kind of learn on the fly.
Makes sense. Now, if I'm a founder, a SaaS founder, and I'm just starting my company, and, you know, somebody has told me, hey, your number one thing that you need to pay attention to is churn. You might, you know, sign up some customers, but if you have a big churn, forget about it. Your business is not getting anywhere. And you are always in the battle of, you know, signing up customers and losing customers. So pay really, really attention. That should be your number one important thing and important metric to look at. Then that SaaS founder come to you and say, hey, you know a lot about churn, and I want your advice on things I should do or I should not do at the start to build my company, to build the product, to bring the team. What are those things that really either I should do, or the things you say definitely you should not do, these things that helps me down the road to manage the churn?
That's a fantastic question. And it's very rare for new founders to ask us this, so we don't get to talk about it a lot. So I'm excited to, because generally what happens is new founder starts, they do nothing but focus on growth. And then 12, 18 months down the road, they come to us and they're like, oh my gosh, help us put these fires out. But the advice that I give is, early on in your company's timeline, the information and data is going to be kind of muddy because, you know, you just don't really know who your best customer is. There's a lot to figure out in that first year of like growing your initial customer base. So what I recommend is focusing on data collection over that time. So allowing customers to cancel and making sure that you collect why they cancel, how they were feeling about your product when they cancel, and what they wish would have been different. And this can all be handled in a very nice, elegant cancellation flow. And what's important about that is not just collecting the information, which, you know, some customers do early on, they just dump it in a spreadsheet, which is better than nothing. But what we have done that we find immensely more helpful is actually tracking that data over time, so that as you make product and pricing changes, you can watch that cancellation data that's always lagging, you know, 2, 3, 6 months, whatever your LTV is. And And you can track that information and go through for the different segments that are canceling for different reasons. You can go through the feedback specifically for each segment and understand why they're canceling, what's missing, what can you do better. So I would actually recommend to new customers getting started is get these processes in quickly to collect the data as customers leave, because churn's inevitable. I mean, it's always inevitable, but it's always going to be higher early on because you're probably not just targeting the perfect customers right out of the gate. So I'd actually recommend getting these flows and surveys in place for when they cancel and then focus on growth, but periodically come back and review it to see, okay, what's working, which of these cohorts are sticking well, which ones aren't, and what are they saying about their feedback on their way out? Because sometimes you have great customers that sign up, they love your product, they're canceling not because they don't like it, but just something came up and they'll be back later. So, you know, being able to go through that data in a really intelligent way over time, I think is really important. And then after maybe definitely 12 months, between 12 and 18 months, I think is where you can really start getting a holistic view of where your retention is going to level out. It'll always start super high and then kind of drop. And, you know, it takes 12 to 18 months generally to like really see where that baseline is. And then you can start adjusting from there.
That's a great advice and great point, because not just capturing the information from your customers, which is must do, but also, as I understand from your explanation, you have to capture the information internally at the time that the churn happens, meaning that if I lost this customer, what was the price at that time? What was the pricing model at that time? What changes happened during that time? You know, a lot of these, because then you go back to the historical data, and just because the customer didn't like, you know, something, it may not be adequate. You need the whole picture. You need to put it in the right context. So capturing a lot of other things around that and gives you the right context, so you might be able to better understand the pattern that what happened at the time we did this, we saw higher churn. And when we did the other thing, then the churn went, you know, lower. That's a good point. Now, with regard to the companies that you have seen and they really wanted to address the churn, how many of them are really successful to do that in the short amount of time versus it's something that really takes some fundamental changes to happen, and it's not that easy, and it may take a year or two to really change the course and improve the churn? Or, you know, you may say, no, many cases actually can be addressed in a very short period of time. And if one way or the other, what characteristics define that you are in bucket A or bucket B?
It's interesting, this conversation is revisiting pricing models so much, because what we find is that if a customer hasn't found their product market fit, you know, combined with their correct pricing model that works for their segment, it's harder to cut churn, because there's a lot of fundamental issues that have to be done from a pricing and product perspective. Whereas a third party like us that is software, we can't really fix those things. So we look for that a lot early on in our discovery process in sales, is really trying to understand, you know, not just where your churn is, but what's going on underneath that's creating that churn level. But then to your question, is the customers that can cut churn really fast are the ones that they have product market fit, their pricing model is great, and it fits their customer base, and they're growing really fast. But because of their segment, because of, you know, all the factors that lead up to that determine their churn band, they just haven't taken a lot of these additional measures. Which for us are, there's four different areas. There's voluntary churn. So customers that go click the cancel button, you can save those with cancellation flows. There's failed payment recovery, or dunning is kind of the old term there, which is when a payment goes into, when the subscription has a failed payment and it goes into recovery, how do you recover that subscription and get it back on track? Reactivations, also, again, that life cycle marketing, how do you bring customers that were happy and canceled back in? And then the fourth is churn prediction, which is the hardest. And you generally need a large data set to be really accurate with that. But those four things, when a customer has found product market fit and their pricing model is working and their growth is working, we can use those four different areas of retention and really make impacts very quickly. We've had AI customers right now are really our biggest segment because they're all growing so fast. And a lot of them have figured out their pricing model and product market fit. And we've had a few fast growing AI companies that have installed Churnkey and saved tens to almost $100,000 in 1 to 2 months because they just need those, you know, additional retention tools put in place that they didn't have before.
Interesting. So I could get into AI, but but let me ask you as last question, if there is any book or some books that you would like to recommend.
My favorite business book of all time, I like to bring this one up because it's very different. It's a book called Moneyball. They made a movie about it. Brad Pitt was the star. That's probably how most people know it. But there's a really fantastic book that was based on, and it's all about the general manager of the Oakland A's who is trying to build a baseball team with very limited resources. And it is my favorite depiction of going into an established market with limited resources, limited help, and needing to come up with very creative, new, fresh approaches to beat competition. And to me, I think that's what in SaaS we're constantly having to do every few years because the landscape changes. The players change, the people with the money changes. You'll have competitors that raise millions of dollars and you are bootstrapped and just have, you know, three people and a lot of time, and you have to find creative ways to do that. And so there's no specific baseball strategy that really applies outside of what they wound up doing was becoming much more intelligent about the metrics that they track and why they track them and what little levers they can pull to improve those without spending the least amount of money. And we've always had that approach with our businesses of, you know, we're not going to raise more money than others. We're not going to, you know, sometimes we don't even feel like we have the biggest vision to go after, but what we can do really well is listen to our customers and build a good product and focus on what are the little levers that we can pull with uniquely and sometimes creatively that our big competitors can't do. And so that's, especially if you're a sports fan and love startups, go read that book because it's all about kind of basically a bootstrapped underdog story against the big VC, is the kind of the Orioles, or sorry, the A's are the bootstrap startup and the Yankees are the VC funded villain. So if you like that story, it's a good place to go.
Yeah, there are so many parallels there, of course. Great. Thank you very much for the discussion, Baird. It was great to have you here, and thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. If anybody wants to find me, I think I'm still the only Baird Hall on LinkedIn. So just search for me there, and I should pop right up. I'd love to chat startups, churn, angel investing, really anything and everything. Find me there.
Yeah, and we will provide the link so everyone can easily get to the company and to you on LinkedIn and other social media when we publish this content. Great.
Perfect.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.